Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex and Justin.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And Pete. Rip Pete. Rip Pete, but Rip Pete. Life to our man in the booth, Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime. Living.
Very exciting.
Large.
Actually, Pete is literally in the woods right now, so he couldn't be here this week.
That's not how he's usually figuratively in the woods when it comes to reviewing comics. He's in the physical woods.
All right, fair enough. So I have a situation to throw out to you and to our audience as well.
Okay.
So tomorrow is my daughter, Penny. She is graduating from second grade.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, huge. So I'm taking the day off work. I'm going to drop her off at school, pick her up from school, spend the whole day with her.
That's
great. Except I also got the chance to go see a screening of Spider-Man Homecoming at the end of the day.
Wow.
So what do I do? Do I spend the day with my daughter and love my daughter, or do I spend the day with the person that I've known for much longer, Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, who you love so much more. Well, you know, Spider-Man's parents abandoned him, and he became a crime fighter. So I think it's perfect if you leave your daughter with your uncle and aunt who live in Queens.
Yep.
And hopefully one of them will die and she will learn a lot about becoming a hero.
Good. Which one? My uncle or my aunt?
Whichever one is stopping a robbery, but not fully equipped for it, you know?
That sounds like my aunt.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
She's a real crime fighter.
Cool. Well, in this scenario, am I a spy? Is that also, or like a robot?
In this continuity, no, you just died regularly.
Oh, okay. All right, I just die in a plane crash or whatever.
Do you really buy that Spider-Man's parents were spies? Is that feels like tacked up.
Well, the first part of his name is Spy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I feel like that was always something they were like, oh, what else can we talk about with Spider-Man? Got the nerd stuff. He's a web-slinger. Let's make his parents spies.
Yeah, why not?
Like us. I don't buy it.
Spies like us.
Cool.
That's just a thing
very
I'm saying.
Very fresh, yeah.
Guys, very excited about the guest that we
have. Well, you got to tell us what you're going to do.
What am I going to do?
Yeah, with your daughter.
Oh, I don't know. What do you guys think? By a show of applause, should I... And I'll ask you both of these again. Spend time with my daughter or go see Spider-Man. All right, first one. Spend time with my daughter.
Oh, fuck. Not the answer you wanted.
All right, go see Spider-Man.
That is
It's go see Spider-Man.
That's
go
not
Spider-Man.
What the winner was.
No, that's
this
clearly.
This is evidence.
Clearly
this is a clear choice. This is parenting at its best. Always ask an audience for a critical parenting decision. My daughter's only one, so I can take her and just like cover her ears.
We actually took my son to go see Guardians of the Galaxy when he was 8 days old.
That's fucked up.
It really was. It was pretty stupid. Guys, do you know who's not stupid? It's our guest tonight. Very excited to have him on. He's the creator and writer of Spill Zone from First Second. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Westerfeld!
Yeah.
Come on out.
Come on out, sir.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. Oh, you do a traditional handshake.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for being here. Mainly, we brought you here to weigh in on whether my daughter, I should spend time with my daughter or go see Spider-Man. What do you think?
I think any child can go see Spider-Man. It doesn't matter how old they are.
No, I'm going by myself.
Oh, because you have a press
She doesn't have a ticket. She doesn't have a ticket.
Yeah,
Smuggle her in. She fits in a backpack. It's like dogs in the subway.
Okay, so now it's cram your daughter into a backpack and see Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I like you already and your ideas. So let's talk about your comic book, Spill Zone. So for those who haven't read it, I don't know how many people in the audience necessarily read the book. Oh, there we go. Awesome. All right, so that person over there knows the concept. For those who don't, can you give a broad overview of the concept of the book?
Yeah. So basically, 3 years before the story starts, Poughkeepsie, New York was destroyed by a strange event called a spill. And nobody knows what this event was, whether it was alien visitation or a nanotech accident or a Cthulhu-esque spillover from another world. Mm. Just weird shit happened. The laws of physics all went funny. People became what are called meat puppets. They just sort of float in the air in a kind of a dead, weird way. The cats make sounds that sound like words. Anyway, it's a mess. It's all walled off now. My main character is a young woman who lived in Poughkeepsie, so her hometown's been destroyed. She had snuck out to do some underage drinking that night, and thereby
classic
survived.
Poughkeepsie. Let yeah. me just say that is some slick Poughkeepsie.
Yep. Over in New Paul's, surviving the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So she and her little sister survived because there was this small group of kids who got out, and no one knows how they got out because none of them have spoken since. So she lives near the spill zone, which is an exclusion zone that's basically, you know, walled off and guarded by National Guardsmen. And she lives with her silent little sister, who has a creepy doll. It's the only thing that she took out of the zone. And the doll and the sister have this conversation going on in thought bubbles in the background that Addison's not aware of, but you, the reader, can, of course, see. And how she supports them is she sneaks into the town at night on her motorcycle and takes photographs of the stuff. Like, she knows the sort of back routes, she knows the guardsmen, she sort of knows how to, she uses her local knowledge to get in there and take photographs of the weird stuff, which she started doing as, you know, as a way to try to figure out what happened to her parents, what happened to her life. And, but now she's realized there's this sort of underground market of people who want these photographs. There's these sort of weird collectors, like there's no, you know, drones don't work in there, nobody's allowed to go in there. So this is the only source of those images. So she's become kind of a strange outsider artist, as well as someone investigating the loss of her town and her family and her life.
Now, I have a couple of questions about the concept, but first, why Poughkeepsie? Where did that come from?
I went to Vassar. Oh. So I know Poughkeepsie.
You've been wanting to take Poughkeepsie down for a while, I feel
and,
like.
But I spent a lot of time in that stage of my life as kind of an urban spelunker. There's this really cool old abandoned mental hospital in Poughkeepsie, which is the best thing in the world. I suggest you go there and break into its graffitied mad
place. You have a lot of great criminal ideas.
Children smuggling.
Yeah.
It is a town that's always been sort of on the edge of ruination. Like, basically, the story of Poughkeepsie is that it used to be an ice town. Like, they would float icebergs down the Hudson from Canada and then sell them to the city all summer. And so Poughkeepsie was full of ice houses. So its economy has basically sucked since the beginning of refrigeration.
A lot of bad ideas. A lot of technology up here. I mean, I'm from upstate New York as well. And so many towns up there they're like, we're into salt. That's all we do. It's like, well, that's not a great business. There's right. a lot of salt everywhere.
Well, but at a time, at the time it was, right? It's not a good long-term business.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what happens to Poughkeepsie in my novel, is a strange technology comes along and fucks it up. There was another inspiration for it. Like, obviously, Chernobyl is an inspiration, and Roadside Picnic, if any of you guys have read that, it's the book that Stalker was based on, video games and the Stalker movie by Tarkovsky. But there was this weird thing that happened in 1986 where it was a small town in Brazil, and they had a radiology unit that got shut down, and there was one of the old sort of radiotherapy units, which is just a sort of, you know, a machine that zaps tumors, like, and in the 60s, was when this thing was built. So it was a really brutal old radiation machine.
You could feel it when it turned on.
Exactly. So they shut down this unit, and they were like, this thing's old, we'll just leave it there. So these scrap thieves went in and stole it and took it to a scrapyard, and they were taking it apart, and they found this really weird glowing dust inside and said, let's show it to our children because they will be amazed, and our friends. And it became like this thing that everybody was really into. Have you seen the glowing dust? And they would go see it. And so cut forward a month later, and like people's arms were falling off, and they were vomiting up their teeth. And like 37 houses had to be raised, all these buses, a whole wing of the hospital where the daughter of the scrapyard dealer was kept had to be raised. Like this entire town, like 100,000 people ultimately got tested. So this entire town got destroyed by this weird technology that they didn't understand that just came out of the blue. And I think that's been like churning around in my head. Like, I lived in Poughkeepsie back then. I was in college. And I remember this event being so strange and horrible and thinking, like, this is kind of what happens to these small towns when these economic forces hit them, or just like a technological change, like the invention of refrigeration. Everything, the rug gets pulled out from under you, and then your reality no longer makes sense.
I feel like I'm getting a sense of why this is, but I'm curious why the main character is a photographer. Where did that come about?
Yeah, I think in a way she's like a big game hunter. Like she goes in and there's these strange creatures there, like the parts of animals combined together to turn into weird, horrible beasts. And I wanted her to be a kind of like a modern day big game hunter. Like she goes in on a motorcycle and she finds these strange creatures and captures them in the way that, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt would go to Africa and shoot gorillas and take them back to the Natural Museum of History.
Would you say that she has to catch them all?
I have no response to that. I'm too evolved.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Nice. That's good. Yeah, that is a good response. Yeah. That's a good response.
You guys are talking about...
I'll tell you after.
Okay, I
know
great.
You made a Spies Like Us reference, so I know your frame of the world is like
generally in the
Dan
80s.
Aykroyd's.
So you had the graphic novel that was released through First Second. You had a free Comic Book Day issue, and you're working on a future volume of it as well, right?
Yeah, the Spill Zone 2, which is the last and final Spill Zone, comes out in July of 2018.
Why the last and final?
Well, I'm just saying that the story will be done.
Okay.
Mm. You know, they're both about 220 pages. It's a complete story. It's not a thing that will drag you forever through the aisles hoping for some kind of closure. Yeah. I mean, I might stay in that world. I love that. You know, I like that world, and there's cool stuff happening in it. But that story will be done.
Yeah, I guess just why I was surprised is when you have a fully fleshed out world and a burgeoning mythology like you do with the first Spill Zone, it always seems in comics like it's, well, this is the beginning of a 60-issue cycle. This is the beginning of something very, very long. So it's just surprising to hear you say, well, it's just two graphic novels, just two graphic novels in quotes.
Yeah, what about it. Spill World or Spill Crisis on Spill Zone?
Spill Night was the name of the... of the Free Comic Book Day. Free Comic Book Day is really cool. I didn't know how that worked.
Yeah. It's right in the name.
Well, I know. I mean, I knew the consumer facing part of it, but I didn't realize all the economics of it are really interesting.
Yeah, you mean like, the comic book shops buy
right? they print, they pay for the printing, you pay for the creation and the design, and it's kind of cool. It's like people paying to pass out free flyers of your stuff.
Yeah, it's. I always make an effort on Free Comic Book Day, mainly because I'm a pretentious jerk and whatever. But
yeah,
I try
to
let as many people as know as possible that this is awesome that you're getting these free comic books. Isn't this fun? But ultimately, it's costing a lot of people a lot of money, including the stores themselves. Well, so whenever I and the creators, so. Whenever I go in, I pick up a couple of free comic books, but I also make sure to try to buy a couple of books as well.
Nice.
Balance it out.
Very responsible.
What do you
consumer.
Do?
I remember when it is. In May.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
First Saturday in May?
That's exactly right.
Great. And then you pick up some books?
Yeah, sometimes.
Did you buy some books?
I buy a lot of comics in general.
You're
really
like
shaming me about this one whole thing.
Kind of
but
evens out a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not a Saturday guy. I'm a Wednesday guy.
Oh, right. You could go Wednesday and then hang out until Saturday.
Oh, does that work with a family?
I don't know. I barely
is that when
see
you
mine.
Go out for a pack of cigarettes?
Yeah, I went. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow night.
Oh,
at the
cool.
Spider-Man screening. Hey, I got to go out for cigarettes. I'm like, you do not smoke.
Yeah,
be like, it's a Spider-Man screening. They'll be like, same thing.
Oh, you're going to instantly admit you're lying?
I can't lie to them.
Oh, cool.
I'm sorry.
So I did Free Comic Books Day in Beaufort, Georgia. It was,
uh-huh.
it was
oh,
part
awesome.
Of the Spill Zone tour, and it was really cool because this comic book store was, I mean, I do a lot of book tours because I'm generally a novelist, and I'm used to, you know, like the night before I had done something at Avid Reader in Athens, Georgia, which is a cool little lefty Black Lives poster in the window kind of classic bookstore. But then I drove out to Beaufort, GA, and there was this basically a strip mall.
Yeah.
And one of the things was this sort of, 10,000 square foot comic book store, which is the big comic book store for all of Atlanta, the greater Western Atlanta area. And they had brought a big Silver Surfer statue that got way too hot in the sun. Like, little kids would walk up to it and be like, oh, it's so great. Ah!
Cosmic sort of forces are burning me!
Burn their hands. And there was a big line outside, and the guy and everybody there was so ready to rock and to do Free Comic Books Day. There were cosplayers, and people had brought their cats in cosplay. And they all walked up to me and said, thank you very much for being here, Mr. Westerfeld, and tell me about your comic book. And then they bought it.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
It was great.
Since you have been both in the book world and the comic book world, how do they compare? What's different? What's the same?
Well, I don't know about the publishing part of it, because I'm published by First Second, which is part of Macmillan, which normally does books.
Right.
So I'm getting treated more, it's more like a, you know, it's not like a creator-owned comic. It's like you wrote a book. And I, so that stuff is all great and what I'm familiar with. It is different, though, to go to a lot of comic conventions. And that's exciting and fun and great.
What are book conventions like?
Well, book conventions are like, you know, ALA. So there's that's all librarians.
All librarians?
Yes.
Interesting.
So you...
So it gets nuts.
Oh, yeah. ALA is like the drunkenest. Actually, no. The drunkenest convention I've ever been to is TLA, which is the Texas Library Association.
Yo, that's nuts.
So imagine, like, it's Austin. You're on 6th Street, and you've got 7,000 librarians all there.
Are that many librarians?
In Texas, there are.
Fuck yeah.
So when they're partying, are they like, I'm so drunk right now. I'm very drunk.
I think it's the opposite. When they cut loose, they are loud, and they don't give a shit about decimal systems.
Yeah.
And none
they're,
of that.
They're fucking throwing out Pizza Hut coupons everywhere to anybody, even if you haven't read the books.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Yeah, they're not into book it at all. Again, very old reference. Yeah.
Librarians are great. Texas librarians are the best.
Yeah. So where can people pick up the book? Everywhere, right?
Everywhere, yeah. They are sold out at Forbidden Planet, alas, but I just looked today.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, you can get it anywhere.
All right. Amazon.com.
Yes, it's a beautiful hardback book for $20. It's great.
Yeah. Awesome. It is, I will say, it is a gorgeous book. It's very exciting and very different. So if you haven't checked it out, please do pick it up. And now we're going to move on to the next section of our show, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah, we do.
One of my favorite things to call it that.
You know who gets crazy is Texas Book Depository people.
Too soon.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, too soon.
Kennedy heavy crowd here. All Kennedys at Comic Book Club Live.
Yep. Let's move on and talk about Batman number 25 from DC Comics. I'll pass this over to you if you want to take a look. So this is the kickoff of the War of Jokes and Riddles, which sounds like a lot of fun. Is it fun, Justin?
That's a fun, yeah. I feel like I had that same thing in like second grade graduation. I got wild with the War of Jokes and Riddles.
Sure.
This seems a little edgier.
Just a little bit.
We had a big cliffhanger at the end of the last issue where Batman proposed to Catwoman. That was exciting.
Yeah, you're looking at me as if I don't know what proposing to people.
Yeah, you know all about it. You're married.
Yeah.
And then we jump right into this story, which is, this is like the next big arc. And it seems very, very, we have the Joker versus the Riddler. The Joker seems to be looking for the perfect joke. He has a bunch of stand-up comedians in a club, and they tell a joke, and if he doesn't like it, he kills them. Which I thought was
stressful. Well, it's kind of looking for the perfect joke. It's also kind of, the Riddler reveals to the Joker, or reveals to the audience at least later on in the book, that the Joker can't laugh anymore, that nothing is funny since Batman has come around. And the Riddler proposes an alliance. He says, listen, if either of us kills Batman, the other one is going to want to destroy the other one. So instead, let's work together to destroy him together and do it simultaneously. And Joker says, I have another idea, and shoots him in the stomach and says, I'll do it myself.
Right.
And that kicks off this war of jokes and riddles. The thing that's really cool about this, we talked about this a couple of shows ago, but Tom King, who's writing the book, puts a different structure in almost every issue he writes. And here, we have that cliffhanger where Batman proposes to Catwoman. We immediately jump into a narrated version of this war of jokes and riddles, the kickoff of it, and it isn't revealed until the end that it's Batman telling it to Catwoman and saying, listen, if we're going to move forward with this, if we are going to get married, you have to know what I did when this happened and how bad things got and how bad I acted.
It's a classic like letter home from war style.
Except he's
laying next to his perhaps fiance, we don't know, telling her the story. And I'm interested, is it going to be the war of jokes versus riddles, or is it like the French and Indian War where it's jokes and riddles versus Batman?
No, I think it's jokes versus riddles.
Well, we don't. I don't think we know that yet.
Really? Yeah. Except they lay out that it's this side of the villains versus this side.
I'm just saying, I got a feeling that they're going to eventually team, because they both don't like Batman.
Really?
I don't know.
Since when?
I mean, that's been a long-standing feud. Huh.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what do you think about Batman and Catwoman potentially getting married? How do you feel about that?
So I'm old.
Yeah.
And I remember when Batman...
Don't say yes so quickly.
When Adam West was R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Was on TV, and I remember that... Catwoman, if she was in the episode, you could tell in the credits because there was an animated Catwoman would go past on her motorcycle. Mm. Do you guys remember? Do you guys know this little factoid? So, no, you don't.
I don't know that, but I did watch the show.
But that was like a great moment for me. I mean, I always thought that Catwoman brought up Batman's game.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, as even when it was Adam West, it was like, It gave it another dimension. So I think
makes for a good partnership.
I hope she says yes.
Yeah. The thing that's really interesting about that relationship and the way they're playing it out in this comic is it isn't something that's been built up anywhere except in Tom King's Batman run. Like, it didn't exist in Scott Snyder's run at all, which was a couple of years.
And I've said this a lot. I feel like Batman and Catwoman, it's always like they have a flirtation, but I never buy it. Because Batman always is like, he's such a hard line, he would never really be with her, it feels like. Except for this run that Tom King's been doing, feels like that they are really building that up.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Do you want them to be together?
Yeah, I'm into it.
Well, you like relationships, though.
I love relationships.
Yeah. What about...
Everyone should have
them. Who do you think is going to win the war of jokes and riddles?
Riddles are tricky.
They are. Jokes are funny.
Jokes are funny, but riddles, like if you answer a riddle correctly, it's like, yes. If you tell a joke, it's like, okay, good.
Really?
Riddles are more magical. Like the Sphinx is riddles. Jokes is like a guy on stage.
I know. Well, that's what we are
now. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what I was saying. I didn't want to get too close to the bone there.
But. Yeah.
I got to say, I mean, I write jokes for a living, so... I mean, I got a root for riddles to make their comeback.
Yeah,
challenge me.
What do I write for a living?
Oh, cool. I don't know.
Riddles.
Nothing. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
Articles?
Our riddle-cles.
Who would win in the war of articles?
War of articles and listicles.
Yes. Cool. What do you think?
It's the war of hot takes and listicles.
Hot takes and listicles? Well, I'll give you 17 reasons why listicles would win.
Oh! Yeah!
Yeah!
Got him!
Boom!
You just got buzz fed.
All right, let's move on to our second pick. Archie, number 21 from, of course, DC Comics.
Cool.
No, Archie Comics. So this is the second part of Over the Edge.
Yeah.
A storyline that is going to change Archie Comics forever, which would seem... like an idle threat, except for if you've been reading Archie for the past couple of years, they've actually created a loose continuity just in every individual comic book. So Archie doesn't necessarily tie into Jughead, doesn't necessarily tie into Josie and the Pussycats, but they all have a feel to them. And the Archie comic book in particular has a continuity.
Characters well, this is like the flagship title, though. If stuff happens here, it means
something. So you want to talk about what happens in this book?
Sure. This story's super stressful. So it's like in the after-school special episode of like Saved by the Bell. So in this comic, Archie has been working on this car with Betty for years. It's like their thing. And he last issue, Reggie comes in. He's being a classic jerk. They go race, and one of the cars that has Archie and Betty are in one car. Reggie's in another, and they get in a car accident, and a car goes off the ledge. We don't know what happened. In this comic, three quarters of the book is classic like Archie character stories where it's like Jughead in Food Dude and he's like trying to get free hamburgers. Then he gets a call at the end of the little like two-page comic and it's like, oh my God, something's happened. Then it's Mr. Weatherby having a like scary adventure and then more and more characters, Moose. And then we get to the end and it gets suddenly very serious. They're at the hospital. We find out that Archie's okay. We find out that Reggie's okay and Betty is like dying. And it was very stressful.
Yeah,
like, it was very well done. Mark Waid is great.
You've been reading Archie, right?
Yes, I have. I'm not up on Over the Edge, though.
Okay, well, what do you think about this? How do you feel just generally about the plot-driven Archie?
I love all the new Archie stuff. I mean, the TV shows, I've stopped watching it, but I liked the tone it had. I liked the sort of weird... I felt like it was the Twin Peaks reboot we deserved.
Interesting. What about the one that we have now?
That one
do
I'm holding
Do we deserve
back.
That one?
I don't know if we deserve that one. I mean, we clearly don't. But
I mean, it's pretty good.
That's why we don't deserve it.
Interesting.
But, you know, the thing about Archie in the real world is supposed to take you into uncomfortable places and make you think, this is not my father's Archie. And that's what it's doing, is making you feel like you live in an edgier, weirder world where the old stuff is coming up and the things that you thought were normal aren't normal anymore. I mean, that's 2017.
Definitely that. But I think that's so interesting that people are like, well, Archie has to take you to uncomfortable places. When all these other comics, like, they are not the... They're not your father's Thor or your father Batman. It's all like just more stories in that vein. While Archie,
but Archie was for a long time. It was sort of that thing that was always stuck where it was.
That's what I mean. So like, why is it now like Archie's the edgy one because they made those big moves? Because Archie was the tamest of the tame.
I think it's just because Archie had nothing to lose. Right? Everybody thought about it as the same thing for decades and decades and decades. In a very different way than Marvel or DC are the same thing for decades, but they give the illusion of change without any actual change, that it's always cyclical. I mean, we've been talking a lot about what's going on with Steve Rogers with Captain America right now, where, you know, a year ago now, they introduced that Steve Rogers was part of Hydra. They slowly unfolded the storyline. It's encompassed the entirety of the Marvel Universe. But ultimately, even for that first panel where you saw Cap say, Hail Hydra, you knew he's going to turn out to be good at the end. You know,
well,
he's going to try.
Yet.
Sure, but you know it. You know eventually it's going to return to that place.
Or it's just going to be a reboot and they're going to ignore it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But Archie changing does feel big just because it didn't change. It's like when, I don't know, it's like your grandparents getting divorced.
Whoa.
There's something weird about that. There's something that's kind of like more shocking and more intense about that.
Like, why'd you wait so long?
Exactly. Like, it's that late, and you've really been looking at them for that long together, and you have all those pictures, and now that picture's broken, and it's more shocking. It's more real than you getting divorced or your parents getting divorced.
Divorce at 80? What are you guys even hoping for?
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It is really interesting reading this after watching Riverdale, after Riverdale coming out, because, of course, the Archie comics and them doing edgier stuff predates that. We were talking about that going into Riverdale, how Afterlife with Archie and the Sabrina book and even what they were doing in the Archie comic book was changing things and pushing things forward in a very significant way. Going all the way back to Kevin Keller, actually. I mean, for Archie comics, having a out gay character who's... wasn't just gay, and that's the only thing that was about him.
He had more of a personality.
Yeah, who had an actual personal life and an actual personality was a really huge big thing, and they were experimenting and taking chances. But reading this after Riverdale, my initial gut reaction was, they're just doing this because of Riverdale. And then I needed to remember, wait, no, this actually predates that. Yeah. So it's an interesting place for Archie, I think, to be in right now in a post-Riverdale world where it feels like in a certain way, it's responding to that.
Interesting.
Do you feel that way or no, not at all?
No, I think it's pretty separate. I think that Mark Waid is the writer of this, and he seems like he has a vision that he's just like going after, and he's really great.
Do you think Betty's going to die?
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
It would answer the question, though. Archie would be with Veronica.
That would be completely weird if Betty died.
Yeah, and then she'll just be a ghost haunting Archie.
Betty dies in the next issue. Archie's like, well, that takes one decision off of my desk. Cool.
Ooh, makes it easy.
Yeah.
The ghost next door. I don't think she's going to die, though it does say one character will be changed forever.
Right.
So.
I think we were talking about this a little bit before the show. I think she'll probably end up in a wheelchair, and she will have to deal with that. Archie will have to deal with that. Everybody will have to deal with that, and it'll be a thing.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. All right, let's move on to another character who's been changed forever for the next year or so in The Mighty Thor, number 20 from Marvel Comics. Now, Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman, his run on this title has been phenomenal across the board. One of the best books that Marvel is putting out. This issue was real interesting. You want to set this up a little bit?
Again, is anybody reading this out there in the crowd? Literally
no
one.
Do you guys read comics?
Yeah. No, these are all librarians.
Nice and quiet. Drunk in Austin.
Yeah. Librarians read comics.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. In fact, that's like the hot section in the library, I would think, these days. So in this comic, Thor is... There are a bunch of Thors, and there's a couple hammers. you got to have a hammer to make a Thor. So one Thor, the original Thor, he became unworthy. He couldn't lift the hammer anymore. The hammer is very temperamental about who can lift it.
So he got an axe.
Yeah, he got an axe, which is like... In a lot of ways, cooler than a hammer.
Yeah, it's like a sharp hammer.
It's a sharp hammer. It's like a man who's around tools a lot, right?
Yeah.
Real carpenter over here.
Yeah, the other end of the hammer is like an axe, right?
No. We should build something one of these days.
I'm not interested.
Okay, great. So one Thor became unworthy, lost the hammer. Another Thor picked up the hammer. That is... Jane Foster, who used to date the Thor, who lost the hammer. And then there's been this other hammer that's been hanging around with that is waiting for a person to pick it up. And this issue is all about putting the fun character who's always hungry through, like, a bunch of shit, and then he gets so angry that he becomes the new Thor.
Yeah. This is... you keep using the word stressful. This is a really stressful issue to read. You know...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's the mythology that already existed in Thor. I mean, it's based on mythology, but I mean, like, the comic mythology that Walter Simonson and others set up. Jason Aaron has been playing with that and adding a little bit of his own things. Here, he's calling back to, I always pronounce it wrong, but the Surtur saga?
Mm-hmm.
With the fire from Muspelheim.
Yeah, Muspelheim.
Yeah, there you go.
Muspelheim.
And it starts running through the dwarves' realm. It's this fire that burns hotter than fire. These evil beings.
Hotter than fire.
Yeah,
it's very
these
hot.
Evil beings are coming through. Volstagg is trying to protect these children, and he can't. And there's this panel of Volstagg just covered in blood. Basically his consciousness left his body because he was in such a rage and he's so anguished over the death of these children. And he becomes this War Thor.
War Thor.
And it's really sad.
This is very depressing.
Yeah, it's very depressing. I do appreciate the fact that they did it in one issue, that it wasn't like, who is War Thor? And it stretches out over six issues, and it's a whole mystery and everything. Mm. Instead, they set it up in one issue. It seems like it's something that maybe will be resolved in three issues.
Well, it feels like they're building out, Jason Aaron's building out this mythology, so he can really have, there's a war that's coming, and it's all...
Right, exactly. It's crazy that it's this big already, and there's all of these other realms when he's been building to this War of the Realms for... I don't know, what, two, three
something
years
like
now?
That.
Something like that?
Dwarves, dark elves, light elves, humans.
Yeah, and it's huge. It's as huge as Thor should be, and it feels big, and it's great. And Russell Dodderman in particular, and Matthew Wilson actually on colors and helping out on the art, I believe. Gorgeous.
Really
absolutely
great.
Gorgeous. It feels big. Are you a Thor fan at all?
I don't have any Thor in me.
Have you seen the movies?
I'm unworthy. Yeah, I see the movies. I see all the MCU stuff, but
right.
I don't really read Thor.
All right, that's okay. You should check it out.
He's got a hammer. He was a frog once, I know that.
Yes.
That's
yes,
nice.
There you go.
That's
the
real
only
fan
important
base
thing.
Thorg.
Cool. Well, pick up all of these issues, and we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Woo! And for your audience questions, you're going to get some free comics. All you have to do is ask a question of our amazing guest here, or for one of us. My mic cord is particularly short today, so I'm just going to hang out over here. But raise your hand. You, sir, right over there, come on up. Oh, thank you very much, Justin. Appreciate it. All right, what's your name? What's your question?
Jason. Hi, Scott. Nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you, too. Thanks for coming.
I read Spillzone, I think, a few weeks ago. Really good. Two questions. What led the decision to make it, say, webcomic to print? And what, I guess, interested you in... Okay, let me rephrase the second part. Why the shift from like steampunk to like a fringe science-y type real world setting?
Okay, what was the first question again? The first question was
what led to leading it from a web comic to a print comic?
Yeah, that was first second suggestion. They were like, we would just want to, you know, they kind of thought it would be cool to put it on. You know, they wanted to do skinnies, actually. But, you know, their infrastructure, the stuff that makes them go is a regular publishing company, and they realized they didn't really have the warehouse to put out a serial comic. So they said, let's just put it online, like have it come out every Wednesday, because I'm also a Wednesday guy. And I thought it would be interesting for me, as somebody writing it, to write in 6-page... blocks. Because, you know, I'm a novelist, and like my first scene that I wrote was like 18 pages, and I was like, wow, that's really, it was like a conversation.
Yeah.
That's novelist shit, man. We, you know, like we go forever, there's nothing stopping us, we don't have format. One of the cool things about, you know, I mean, prose, the whole point of prose is that it's a line of text that you could read in a line if you wanted. You could just like just go along a wall and just read a novel that way.
And expensive to publish.
Yeah, it would be a weird way to publish it. But it, theoretically, the, you know, the form doesn't militate against that, whereas a comic book has all this stuff in it with pages, and like you got to land, like really interesting stuff has to happen on the bottom right-hand page so that when you turn, you know, it sort of compels you to turn the page. And I wanted that structure. I wanted as much structure as I could have so that I didn't turn back into a novelist and write these fucking 27-page conversations.
That's hilarious.
So like having a, like, you know, knowing that we're going to drop 6 or 8 pages every Wednesday meant that I had a, you know, I had this drumbeat in my head that was organizing my thoughts and making me be punchy and do what I want to do. And the second question was, why did I switch from steampunk to upstate New York quasi-apocalypses?
it's happening right now.
That just seems natural to me. you're talking about Leviathan, of course, my steampunk trilogy, and I mean, that in a way was a big inspiration for doing Spillzone, because I did, that's an illustrated series of novels. It's set in 1914, and I wanted it to look like books from 1914, which all had illustrations in them. So I got this really great guy, Keith Thompson, to illustrate it, and it's sort of like pseudo-Victorian manga illustrations in this steampunk world. But it was working with an illustrator and realizing that it was fun to write with pictures, that it meant that you had to change scale and you had to change, like you couldn't have 5 scenes in a row in a room, because it just felt like you're in that room size. You had to keep people up on top of an airship or crawling under a bed to like change, you know, to move those scale around it, to change the way things looked and to make it dark in one scene and light in the next scene. And that dynamism that I was compelled to do for an illustrated novel made me want to do a comic book. But why I said it in Poughkeepsie, well, like I said, it was just some random shit that was in my head since college. Is the real answer to
your
question.
It's a great answer.
Cool. All right, you're going to get some free comics. Let's get our next question. You right there, come on up. All right, what's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is Alan. So this sort of seems to fall into the kind of the weird horror genre, like, because you mentioned Cthulhu and Lovecraft and all that, and sort of the more modern stuff like Southern Reach and whatever. So what kind of that kind of fiction sort of inspired you in terms of writing this novel?
Like my favorite book, I'll mention it. I mentioned it before, but I'll say it again. It's called Roadside Picnic, and it's by Boris and Arkady Strugatsky, who are super fucking huge in Russia. Like they have a square in Leningrad named after them. It's not called Leningrad anymore. Like I said, I'm old.
Very old.
They have a square in St. Petersburg named after them. And they were just like huge, titanic science fiction writers in the Soviet era. And there's this amazing book about an alien visitation site that nobody understands, and it's full of weird stuff. Another inspiration was Samuel R. Delaney's Dahlgren. It was a book that came out in the late 70s or early 80s, and it's really amazing. It's about a city that's been sort of sucked out of the world, and there are people still living in the city. It's sort of like being in a blackout. It's that weird thing where the world continues to go on around you.
Yeah.
And you know that news is happening, and people are, you know, learning new memes that you're not learning because you're in a blackout.
Oh, man. That's the worst. When there's new memes?
Yeah.
And they're new memes happening right now.
They introduced some new memes today.
No.
Holy shit.
No, it's true. They released one new meme today.
What are we doing here today?
Just one of them.
Big meme.
The meme people.
Big meme is after us.
Yeah.
But yeah, that just the idea of cities being like clipped off from the rest of the world has always been interesting to me. It's like, you know, Stephen King novel, The Dome, all that stuff is really, that's always been interesting to me. I've been in two blackouts, and the last one was New York in like 2006. And there's that weird sense that the rest of the world is going on and probably talking about you. But you don't know what they're saying.
You're worried about the gossip about like, oh, New York has no power. I feel like because the bottling of that leads to like heightens everything. So everyone, like some people like go nuts in a fun way. Other people are like losing their minds. So it lets you like really play those relationships.
Yeah, there was a really great bonfire in Tompkins Square Park and people were jumping over it with skateboards. And that was like, that was the best entertainment. It was better than anything that was going to be on TV that night, which is what I was going to do that night. And people and restaurants, like the seafood restaurant near me, was giving away all their food because it wasn't going to be good in like 3 hours. So just all this stuff, like, and all these, and I knew all my neighbors all of a sudden. Like, that's like the last time I talked to any of my neighbors was like the blackout in 2006.
11 years ago?
Roughly.
That's a lot of
that's
time.
Sad.
You should connect with them. Yeah. Or you know what? I'll turn off the power in your building and you guys can reconnect.
It'll be fun. It'll be great.
Cool. All right, you're going to get some free comics too. You, sir, come on up. What's your name? What's your question?
Kevin, first of all, Alex, do you have a long trench coat?
Do you want me to flash you?
No.
No, it's for your child.
Tomorrow. You know.
Yeah, you got to.
You want my child to flash you?
Again, missing the point.
No, you know the whole people on each other's shoulders thing. So, of course, since it's your ticket, you'd have to be on her shoulders to get into the movie theater.
How strong is she? Can she carry you?
And my bigger question is, you talked about how Archie, you know, for decades was like the play it safe comic and has since broken out. What are some other really like safe things that you just want to see break out of their shells?
Ah, interesting.
Turtles.
Turtles?
How
nice.
Good are turtles?
I just love to see them break out of their shells.
Cool. Man, you should write for the posters of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I'm just trying to win this war of jokes and riddles.
Yeah. The war of posters and half-ass slogans.
Yeah, stuff. What kind of safe stuff would you like to see break out of a shell?
I would love sports casting to break out of its shell. I just think sports would be so great if sports... If the guys talking were just like, fuck that shit. You know, like when there's a bad call and you're yelling at the TV, I want them to yell the same stuff at the TV.
Yeah, well, honestly, I bet that will happen in like 6 months. I feel like we're right on the precipice of that because you're right. Sportscasters are like, well, that's a real carbuncle we got up there. It's just like no one talks like that anymore.
I think that was maybe a bit of a treble he got away with there. Yeah, and it's like that, and you're screaming, that was bullshit. And I want to just, I just want that reflected. Like we have every other sort of inane, horrible behavior out in front of us, like all the time. All the evil, shitty things I do are like celebrated in popular culture and in political culture now. Like, why does sports casters have to be polite? It's ridiculous.
That's funny.
Justin, you got to answer
this? I was just talking about the superhero movies in general and how Wonder Woman was so good, but it was still like formulaic in the way superhero movies are, and I feel like that's something that has to be broken, is that formula where, like, Wonder Woman got such credit for being the best DC movie, but that's not a great prize. Like, that's not a crown you want to wear for the rest of your life. So I feel like really breaking the format, being more experimental. I mean, I know I brought it up earlier, but, like, the new Twin Peaks is just, like, showing how we will watch format-breaking storytelling. It's so compelling to see the format broken in a way where it seems simple. Like, it's just, like, long shots, like, weird takes, like, all this.
Well, we were talking about this. We did a podcast based on Legion on FX,
yeah.
And that was something. It was clearly an X-Men TV show, but it was not like any movie or any other TV show that was set in a superhero universe. It's great. It's visually gorgeous. The acting is great. It's very different, but it still plays. It's not like the same either straightforward superhero origin story or Watchmen-esque dark riff on a superhero story that we've seen for, what, 3 decades now? 4 decades? Something? I can't do the math in my head.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that would be
I would be happy with no more origin stories.
Yeah, I think
just like, this guy flies, he has laser vision, I don't give a shit why. That's what he does. I'm fine with that.
That's what I'm looking forward to. That's why I want to ditch my daughter and go see Spider-Man Homecoming, is because there's no origin story. It's just
he doesn't get bitten.
Let me just say, this podcast is not enabling you. It feels like you're really using it for a reason.
Yeah, I think so. Cool. I think we can take, you're going to get some free comics as well. I think we can take one more question if anybody has anything. Anybody?
Right over here.
Sir, right there. Come on up. All right. Come on over here. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is Hugo. So if you had the opportunity to write a novel about any comic character, maybe not even a comics character, but just any prominent figure, I guess, who would it be?
Ooh, like if I could do an authorized novel of somebody.
Very interesting.
Oh.
Wide open.
Absolutely anybody.
It really is. Damn.
So, I'll vamp for you with an unrelated story. I was asked a similar question. I was working at this restaurant and Paul Pope came in, and I didn't know I didn't know what he looked like. And we happened.
Oh, he wasn't wearing his Pope hat?
He wasn't wearing his Pope hat. And it was like the owner of the restaurant I was working at owned an art gallery next door, and we had a Paul Pope print up on the wall. And he was like, oh, I love this print over here, which was something else. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's great, but I really love this Paul Pope print behind me. He's like, oh, that's cool. I'm Paul Pope. And we talked for a long time. He drank a bunch of wine. And eventually he was like, yo, name your favorite villain, not just from comic books, from anything. And he got out like a pen to draw. And we had these brown paper mats. And I was like, oh, no problem. And I went in the back in the kitchen. And I was like, fuck, what do you say? He's going to draw it for me, I think. I got to say something. And I oddly said the Minotaur, which is not something I ever think about. Or it's like, oh, of course, I want the Minotaur. But he sat there and talked to me while he drew this amazing Minotaur print with all this. The Minotaur didn't mean to be evil, but he still suffers the fate of the vanquished. And it's Theseus killing him. Like, it's an amazing print. I have it framed in my house. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think, so whenever I watch, like, I'm a YA writer. Like, I write teen books. And whenever I watch anything, I'm like, this is pretty good, but I think it would be better if it was from the teenager's point of view. Like, the teenagers seeing this stuff is more interesting. And I've been watching The Leftovers lately.
Ah.
And to me, like, that whole world where, 2% of humanity just disappears and nobody really can figure out the pattern of, like, who disappeared and who remains. Was it the good people? Was it the bad people? Nobody understands. And all the adults go into shock. And what's interesting about it to me is, like, you get little glimpses that the teenagers aren't as in shock as the adults, because the world is already so fucking weird when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
Like stuff is strange and you're not as certain about the way the world is supposed to be. So, like, 2% of the people are disappearing. It's like, yeah, that's okay.
I'm going through puberty. I got changes happening to me too.
That's strange too. So, like, I kind of would want to do like the leftovers, TV leftovers, not novel leftovers, because I like the TV show better than the novel. But I would want to do like the TV show that's just the teenagers sitting around like, oh, dad's freaking out about the whole Departed shit again.
Just like a very casual take.
Yeah, but like they don't really super funny. Care. Just like, but it's basically all the parents have gone crazy because this world has been, this earth-shattering event has like unpinge their sense of safety and like we can't protect our kids, all that stuff. Teenagers know that you can't protect anybody or anything and that life is going to be crazy, and that's why they drive 100 miles an hour. So they don't really, they're not as worried, but they're seeing their parents get unhinged and they're taking advantage of that in interesting ways. I think I would want to do like the teen, you know, like YA leftovers.
That's cool.
I think you'd really like a book called Archie. They're doing an arc called Over the Edge right
now. Nice, good recommendation.
You should check it out.
I would do a stream of consciousness novel from Donald Trump's perspective.
It's called Twitter.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Good stuff. All right, guys, that's it for your audience questions.
Nice.
Now we're going to move on to trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to my good friend, Justin Tyler.
I'm filling in for Pila Page tonight on trivia. The way this works is I'm going to ask you some questions, and you answer them, and you can win a gift certificate, a gift card, which is a modern gift certificate, to Midtown Comics, because they have been nice enough to sponsor the show for $25. Who would like $25 free? Yes, you there. I'm pointing at you, so you know that I recognized you.
Yeah, good job.
Please come on down. These questions, when Pete does it, they're very easy. These are slightly more difficult. Pete is our third host, if you've been to the show before. Pete, the trivia is about Pete. What is your name?
Stella.
Stella. Audience, Stella. Yes,
Stella.
Great. I've probably heard that before. So all Pete is in the woods this week. What phase of Wolverine's life is he living right now? Is it A, running through the woods in a berserker rage? B, running through the woods with a big computer over his crotch, like Barry Windsor Smith style? Or C, running through the woods complaining about Secret Empire? So it could be any one of those. Whichever you think Pete, the third host who's often here, is actually doing right now.
B.
Oh, you really? You think he's nude with a weird 80s computer over his crotch? That is correct. I've seen a photo. Great job, Stella. You are one for one.
I knew that.
Question number two. Pete is in the woods this week. When he returns, he will be A, totally zen and finally at peace. Probably not that one. An audience member scoffed when I said that. B, having a newfound appreciation for his friendship with his confirmed best friends, Justin and Alex. Or is it C, rabid?
C, rabid.
C is correct. Wow, that was the fastest answer I've ever heard for a game show question. That is correct. 2 for 2, Stella. Can you go 3 for 3? Question number 3. Pete is in the woods this week. In his inevitable vision quest, he will encounter A, Alex, but he'll be an owl who only reads pervy comics. That's correct. B, me, but I'll be a fox that interrupts all of the other animals when they're trying to talk. Or C, himself, a bear that is angry because he didn't like the comics that he brought to hibernation this year.
C.
C is correct!
Yes, totally.
Pete always chooses the wrong comics. Congratulations. Here's your gift card. I will have to write your name down or Pete will be mad at me after the show.
Yeah, when he returns from the woods. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Hey, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, that's great. What a selfish way to start, but fine. Go ahead. You go first, Alex. Why don't you tell us
all
what you're looking for?
You go first.
Give me a second. Looking at the list.
All right.
Does it have to be on the list?
What?
Does it have to be on the list?
No.
Can it be,
no,
can it be recent? For us, it has to be on the list.
It has to be on the list. Also, Justin just hasn't looked yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking forward to Renato Jones season 2, number 2 is coming out. I don't know if you've been reading this book by Kare Andrews, but it's bananas, over the top, as if Batman only killed rich people. I know he doesn't kill people in general, but he basically is like hunting insane rich people. And if you read any of Kare Andrews' stuff before,
he literally is an insane rich person.
Yeah,
by the way.
No, I know. And if he was hunting other Batmen, I guess, who were like perverted and gross and terrible, It's great, and it has these fake ads in it for very 1%, very rich stuff that are incredibly well done. The whole art design of the book is fantastic. It's incredible. Definitely pick it up. Justin, what are you looking forward to?
Thank you, Alex. I'm glad you went first, and now it's my turn. I'm looking forward to Black Magic number 6 from Image Comics, which has been a bit delayed. This is about a police department where the main character is also a witch. It's very good, beautifully drawn. Please check it out.
Cool. Scott, what are you looking forward to?
Just today, I bought Paper Girls 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. Nice. I love me some Paper Girls.
Very good.
And I like the way that story is expanding and in super random ways. And I have no idea where it's going, which is a feeling.
We know.
A feeling I normally don't get from, you know, I don't get it this strong from Western comics usually. Like,
yeah.
Usually it's the manga where I'm like, I have no idea where this is going. But so I like that. And I can't wait for Monstrous 2. That is my other big thing, which I think comes out not tomorrow, but in a week or in a couple weeks.
I think that's right. Monstrous, yeah. By the way, Marjorie M. Liu. It's a gorgeous book, beautifully, beautifully drawn. And if you like weird magical worlds with fox people and other things, definitely check it out.
Yeah, it is. It is very close to Spill Zone in terms of its sort of weird horror and lots of like eating of mutants, which is strange and disturbing. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool. Monsters and plug your stuff again. What should people check out?
As I said, Spill Zone is out, and you can go buy it. It's art by the amazing Alex Pouviand, and colorings by Hilary Sycamore, also amazing. Other things you can buy by me include the Zeros trilogy, which is about teenagers in a small town in California who have weird social superpowers. All of their superpowers are embiggened by crowds. So like there's like some of them have sort of crowd control where they can sort of create a mood in a room or, you know, make a mob go off, and others of them become more invisible the more people come into the room. So
that's cool. In
a huge crowd, he's completely invisible, but if you're alone with him in an elevator, you can kind of talk to him. So all of their superpowers are activated by crowds, and that sounds almost like a riddle called Zeros. It's in the war of riddles versus jokes, I am pro-riddle.
There we go. A couple of things before we go. In addition to this live show, we do a couple of TV recap podcasts. We're doing a Preacher catch-up podcast right now. We're going to have to do a little catching up ourselves since the new season premiered. We also have an American Gods podcast, a Legion podcast, as we mentioned, a Riverdale podcast. You can check them out in the comic book feed, or they have their own individual feeds, both on iTunes and Google. Because we're doing all this stuff costs us a little bit of money to do, even if it is free to listen to and free to visit. If you are here in the theater, well, we don't have a hat this week. Just throw a couple of dollars.
Just throw on the ground over
here. On the ground, and we'll pick
them
up.
Throw your pennies at us.
Honestly, we don't even care.
Yeah. We're so cool with it.
If you are listening online, patreon.com/comicbookclub. What else do we want to plug?
Check us out on Facebook so you can find out who we have on our show. And you can follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com and nerdist.com for the podcasts and more. A couple of people you want to thank before we go, our fabulous interns, Iman Bell, Tom Radar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. Also, we want to thank Scott for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime.
Thank you for braving the trains.
We want to thank you guys. We are every Tuesday night at 8 in New York, totally free. Please tell your friends good night.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.